Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
We chat to Professor Colleen Aldous, a clinical researcher at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, who is way better positioned to talk to those issues than I am. Professor Aldous, thank you for being with us this afternoon.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me again.
So, Prof, yeah, controlled compassionate use. Is this a victory or is this a Pyrrhic victory?
I think it is a step towards a victory. If we think of what SAHPRA was saying in December, just before Christmas, where they were threatening legal action, to earlier this month on the 6th of January, where they said they've looked at the research and they'll entertain Section 21 applications, to today where they've said, okay, we'll bring this drug into the country. There have been leaps in the last month. So when it comes to controlled compassionate use, I'm not sure where that has come from. They gave us two options earlier this month. They said Section 21 or research. Now, to point out, research is not quick to get off the ground. It's not going to get the drug to the patients. I agree. Much more research needs to be done looking at the drug in the context of treating a COVID patient. I'm not sure what the difference is going to be between the Section 21 application and the controlled compassionate use. I'm not sure if they were inundated with Section 21 applications and therefore could not deal with them and have come up with an alternative way of getting the drug out. They said that they'll let us know in the next couple of days what the guidelines are going to be.
I need to stop you there for a minute because I'm not that sure I understand what a Section 21 application is.
Okay. A Section 21 application is a standard application where a doctor applies for medication that is not available in the country generally. It's not registered for one patient to use.
Okay.
So when people were using ivermectin for scabies, they'd have to apply on a Section 21 to be able to prescribe ivermectin ointment for a patient with scabies. And that happens with a lot of drugs that are not readily available in South Africa. And it's good to have these controls. We don't want any drug being here. And there's some drugs that aren't here because we don't necessarily need them, except for the one or two patients with a rare disorder, and then we can bring them in on a Section 21.
So you've explained the issue really well to me this afternoon for somebody who didn't understand the stuff. The Section 21 is a controlled use for a particular patient. You're saying that was probably cumbersome and backlogged, and hence they brought in this issue of controlled compassionate use. But we are not entirely sure what that means, and it's certainly not going to be a blanket approval, I presume.
Yeah. No, it's not a blanket approval. And I'm just surmising that that might be the reason they came up with this method of getting the drug into the country and to be able to be used. SAHPRA have been very, very diligent in looking at how to deal with the situation. And they are right to make sure that the use is controlled, because when it's controlled, doctors will have to report any adverse event, and they will also have to report that it's had an effect. And that kind of data is certainly going to help us going forward, because there are still academics crying out for more research to happen. And if doctors are going to be handing this drug out to their patients and they have to tell SAHPRA if there are any negative effects or how quickly the patient responded, that data is going to contribute to knowing more about the drug.
Fascinating to hear you talk. We chat pretty much daily to Professor Barry Shube on the COVID issues, and he appeared to be saying that he was one of those who really did feel that it was that more research was required, more data was required, that, you know, things were anecdotal. What I'm finding fascinating is the liability aspect of this issue. So if SAHPRA has given a go-ahead, even in limited circumstances, does that mean then that the drug has been approved and that the liabilities – I'm just wondering what happens if things go pear-shaped. What recourse is there from the injured patient? Or does a different regime apply because of the emergency-type situation that we're operating under?
I think it's the latter, and I think doctors are going to be held responsible, and patients will be taking this drug – they're going to have to give their own permission to use the drug.
Wow, I don't think that's interesting.
Doctors are not going to be able to say, I'm going to give you ivermectin. They're going to say, we can get ivermectin. Would you be prepared to take it? And there would be a signed consent form, I'm sure.
Prof, and your gut feel about the use of this particular drug? Do you think it has a place in the regime?
Absolutely, in the regimen. And I differ from many other academics. There are a lot of senior academics who just turn the blank hand at anything that does not have a large double-blinded randomized control study behind it. And I've explained often why there hasn't been one for ivermectin. But there are lots of studies that are already published. We still have senior academics who are saying there are no studies. There are lots. If they've engaged with the literature, they would know. There are well over 30 studies from across the globe, and they are all indicating in the same direction that there's a drop in mortality and a reduction in the viremic phase. And there are some, there are 10 published studies on the prophylaxis. Now, we haven't applied for prophylaxis in this country. We would just, at the moment, would like it ready for treatment. So when I look at the data, along with people looking at the data that Dr. Hill has got and Tess Laurie, I would like my family to have access to this drug if they got sick.
That is an absolutely fascinating and very honest statement you've just made. I was going to ask you, but I'm wondering, in fact, if you haven't answered the question already, why is this any different from the whole hydroxychloroquine debate during the first round of COVID? And is it not just a manifestation of people being desperate to find a solution?
I think they did look at hydroxychloroquine in large controlled studies and found that it didn't work. Whereas what we've got now is another drug that could be repurposed. And all the evidence so far from different continents is all showing that the drug does work in COVID. So that's the difference.
And then
and
just
there are some people who believe in hydroxychloroquine and are getting good results. I think we should be studying all of these drugs still, but I think ivermectin is showing so much promise, it should not be dismissed.
And let's assume that in fact the results are positive and it's everything that we want it to be. What would the approval process be? And are we talking a long process?
I think that SAPRO would come to the table with some ideas. I know to register the drug, it could take as long as years. If we were to register ivermectin in this country for scabies or head lice, that could take a very long time. It's also who would do it. The drug is out of patent. Any laboratory or any pharmaceutical company with a license can make ivermectin. So which company is going to invest all that time and effort and money into registering the drug? I think it's important that we try and get it registered in this country. If it was already registered for scabies and head lice, we would have been able to use it off-label without a problem right now, just like they were in the rest of the countries where they were doing the research. So getting it registered is going to be difficult. But I agree with the other scientists that I disagree with when they say there are no studies. I say there are. We need more studies on ivermectin in viral disease. We've got lots of information on ivermectin in parasitic diseases, but we need to do the research on ivermectin in viral disease, and that we need for the future because we're going to have other pandemics. And if it's a viral pandemic, if it's another RNA virus, and if we know what ivermectin does and can explain it, then we won't be in this situation. We can just give ivermectin right up front.
Professor Colleen Aldous, clinical researcher at the University of KZN. Thank you so very much for your input this afternoon. Certainly changed my approach, that is for sure.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.